Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com.
Broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to heritageradionetwork.org.
This is Clay Gordon, your host for Straight from the Source, streaming to you from the Heritage Radio Network studio in Brooklyn, New York. If you missed the live broadcast, you'll find it archived on heritageradionetwork.org, and you can also subscribe to our podcast channel on iTunes. In the nearly 20 years that I've been following the chocolate industry, literally from tree to mouth, I've been visiting cacao farms throughout the Americas, spending time with farmers, cacao merchants, and some of the world's best chocolate makers. Growing cacao is something that I've learned that's very hard work, and it's hard not to notice that farmers are often not paid fairly for the work that they do. Straight from the Source was created to explore issues in fair and ethical sourcing in cacao, chocolate, and other foods by engaging in dialogue with participants involved in every length of the supply chain, from growers to producers to chefs, certification bodies, and organizations interested in promoting the concept of good food. My guest today is Sarah Wiener, principal in San Francisco-based Seedling Projects and the organizer of the annual Good Food Awards. Today I'm going to be talking with Sarah about what makes good food good and some of the challenges in setting the guidelines for entrance into the Good Food Awards. In other words, what it means to be good food. I was invited to work on the committee setting the guidelines for chocolate in 2011 and confections in 2012. And believe it or not, defining what good food means is not as easy as it seems. Welcome to Straight from the Source, Sarah.
Thank you.
Good. Before we start looking what good means, why the Good Food Awards? I mean, and how are they different from other awards that celebrate food?
So the Good Food Awards were created to celebrate the kind of food we all want to eat, both super delicious and also environmentally and socially responsible. And what happened was that I noticed there were a lot of organizations out there doing great work recognizing taste excellence. Everything from Savour's 100 list to local papers all around the country. And then there are great certification bodies out there who are making sure that things are meeting the sort of values that I think you and I would want to be supporting. But there weren't, I didn't notice anything that was coming together and bringing those into one solid way to cue consumers that this is going to be super delicious, they're going to love eating it. And also, they're going to feel really good about what they're supporting.
So you mentioned that there are three principles that guide the awards, tasty, authentic, and responsible. So how was it difficult, and how difficult was it to arrive at the three? And which, if any, is the most important of the three?
It was rather difficult to arrive at the three. We wanted from the very beginning for this to be very easy for the consumer to grasp. It's not about technical expertise. It's about what people are going to enjoy and love eating, that also has great values behind it. So we were very attracted to the slow foods principles of good, clean, and fair, and how simple that was.
Right.
But at the same time, I know slow food really strongly believes in a cultural heritage aspect of food, but within good, clean, and fair, that doesn't come across very clearly. So we took this word authentic, and we use it in two ways. On the one, technical side, authentic, and that there aren't artificial ingredients in there. But on another side, it means that it's rooted in a tradition and keeping a culture alive.
Got it. So that brings up the concept of regionality, which is, I think, something that's really important to what it is that the Good Food Awards is all about, that not only do people enter their pickles or preserves or whatever it is that they're going to be entering the categories and that are there, but that they actually are competing, or they're competing is the right word, I suppose, with other like producers within the same area of the country. Now, is that driven by locavore concerns or other kinds of things?
You know, our ultimate goal is to help foster delicious and healthy regional food communities. And we knew that we weren't going to do that if it was just about what's the one best cheese in the whole country or what's the one best chocolate in the whole country. Because in different parts of the country, each of these industries has a different level of maturity. So we wanted to be able to recognize, A, what's unique about a certain region. So the preserves in the South are going to taste different and be using different fruits than preserves out here on the West Coast. And bring that to light and bring those beautiful traditions to sort of national recognition. And we also wanted to make sure that whoever is at the forefront in pushing the limits of what sustainability means, what social responsibility means, and the level of craftsmanship in each region would be recognized. So we do have very distinct regions of the country. We divided into five with the very clever names of North, South, East, West, and Central. And there are winners in each region of each category.
Okay. So how many people end up entering each year? I mean, this is the third year of the awards, and so I imagine the things are, you know, growing and on a trajectory to really explode. Or how is interest in the awards coming about?
Yes. So the first year, you know, it was all an experiment, and we sort of set the goal that if we got 500 entries, that would be incredible. And instead, we got about 750. Mm-hmm. So we knew we did a court, and that was really exciting. And every single person who was entering had to self-certify to our specific criteria around sustainability and social responsibility for their category. So just seeing the breadth, the scope of what was happening around the country was very, very exciting. And then the second year, last year, it grew about 30%. We almost hit 1,000. We had 926 entries from 46 states.
So what states didn't participate? Do you know off the top of your head?
I do. South Dakota, North Dakota, Mississippi, and Nevada. And we're going to get all of them this year.
That's interesting, because I would have thought that Alaska and Hawaii would have been two of the outliers. Just because they're so far away. Do you have any idea, you know, why the states that weren't represented the first couple of years?
No, that's a great question. Interestingly, we did have a winner from Alaska, a beer producer that like uses saps and things that he forages out there
in
some of his brews.
Okay.
But as to your point, I am not sure why. However, I got to give a shout out to South Dakota because their Department of Agriculture tweeted about the Good Food Awards yesterday. So
Woo-hoo,
I think
South
we're going to have some representation this year.
Good.
You know, we really try to do our outreach on a lot of different levels. We call each state Farmers Market Association, for example. And we work with all of our judges, which come from all over the country, to get the word out to their network. We work with Southern Foodways Alliance to get the word out there. Of course, we do, you know, a press release to journalists across the country. And it really just takes one person who gets it and gets excited about it. Almost to mobilize a whole state. It's pretty exciting.
You know, it is very interesting. I sent the press release announcing the opening for entries out to the members of my community, thechocolatelife.com, and I've been fielding inquiries for the last 72 hours about what the guidelines are mean. It's like, can you please interpret the guidelines for me and tell me, you know, do I qualify? I even got one of my members from New Zealand saying, please, can I enter? And unfortunately, I had to say that no, she wasn't able to enter. But one of the hotbeds, I mean, how much of the entrants are from the chocolate world? And was chocolate one of your first choices the first year you did this, or did you add it the second year? How did that go?
Who could leave out chocolate, Clay? Of course it was one of our first choices. So we do add one category each year, but our initial seven categories included chocolate. And this year, our newest category is confections.
Mm-hmm.
So
we have pickles, preserves, charcuterie, beer, spirits.
Cheese,
chocolate, and confections. Eight this year.
And coffee.
All right.
Nine.
Okay. And what category represents the most entries? Where do you get most of the entries from?
The first year, we had the most entries in coffee. Mm-hmm. And the second year, last year, we had the most entries in preserves, almost 200. Okay. That being said, most categories have a lot of entries. You know, most categories hover near to 100, 120, 140. So it's pretty well, it's pretty diverse. Chocolate has fewer. However, there was a huge jump from the first year to the second year. And my understanding, which you could probably enlighten us about, is that really there's been a renaissance in bean to bar chocolate production here in America. So there was actually more companies able to enter.
No, absolutely. If you look at the trend in chocolate making in the United States in the last couple of years, the growth, you know, parallels the early growth of the craft beer movement that we've seen in the last 10 or 15 years. The technology to make chocolate on a small scale is more generally available. The ingredients, I mean, finding high quality cocoa beans is a lot easier now than it was 3 or 4 years ago. And a lot of people have, in this economic climate, have said, you know, I'm tired of working for the man. I want to go and follow my dream, and I'm just going to go create a small chocolate making business. And so we're seeing dozens, if not hundreds, of small chocolate making businesses around the country. People who have been doing it as a hobby for years said, I'm going to try to go do this professionally. So, but what are some of the categories that you considered but haven't selected? I mean, if you add one every year, you know, what are the ones that you've thought about that haven't made it to the list yet?
Things we'd love to have in the future but haven't made it yet include oils, olive oils, and there are also some beautiful nut oils being made around the country. Spreads, we always get lots of inquiries with spreads, cookies, crackers, even I think it would be really wonderful to have a sort of preserved seafood category. From salted fish to who knows what, pickled shrimp.
I'll sign up for that. I mean, what you need me to judge, I'll be there next week to sign up for that one.
yeah, and we get other inquiries too. So we're very excited that some of the people who we aren't able to incorporate into the Good Food Awards, we will be able to work with in the Good Food Merchants Guild.
That's something new this year, isn't it? The Good Food Merchants Guild we've talked a little bit about it, but it's really all about finding a mechanism to be able to help entrants and winners in the awards throughout the year, not just during the presentation of the awards. Is that my understanding of it?
Exactly. What we realized when we saw that there were, you know, nearly 1,000 entries from almost every single state last year was that there are tons of people working towards this more sustainable, more delicious food system all over the country, and that they're eager to be recognized for what they're doing, for their not just taste but also their production values, and eager to come together with their peers. And through the mechanism of the awards, we're able to support about 100 a year. We had 99 winners last year, but the rest of them, which was another 400 companies, we couldn't really help. We didn't have any way to engage further with them. So the idea is that if we all work together, if we all come together, we can do so much more. All of these people can help each other. You know, the coffee people, the chocolate
right.
people can learn from the coffee people and vice versa. Because we're both sourcing beans from varied countries around the world and dealing with the same sort of you know, challenges. So we're creating the Good Food Merchants Guild. It launched today. It will grow into many different forms. And for now, you know, you can go ahead and check it out, but it's about connecting, convening, and promoting all of the people doing this good work in the craft food industry around the country.
Right. Well, that notion of sustainability is an interesting one. And in future episodes of Straight from the Source, we're going to talk about what at least my definition of sustainability is. But one of the things which is interesting about chocolate in particular, and to some extent coffee, is that it's actually one of the few gourmet foods that are out there where the primary ingredient that is grown thousands of miles from where the product is made. I mean, one of the things about artisan cheese is you tend to grow milk within a couple hundred feet of where you're making the cheese. If you're making preserves, especially in the context of Good Food Awards, you may be sourcing from trees that you grow. And this whole notion of sustainability is one that I think, like the concept of organic, it's a word that's come into currency. People are using it a lot, but not everybody really understands what it means or the impact of it. And there's no general agreement about what those words mean. So I know that one of the things the Good Food Awards does is that it actually has a separate category. If you do win a Good Food Award, then there's a step up and a gold award, which is for those producers who are certified organic as well. So you do recognize some of that difference in what it is that you're doing.
Absolutely. And I think it's very complicated, like you said, and there are social issues involved, there's environmental issues, and we really want to recognize the people who are going the farthest that they can, investing in organic certification, giving that extra guarantee to the consumer with a special gold seal, whereas across the board and all of the Good Food Awards categories, you still need to be doing things such as not, you know, having synthetic inputs and other things, but don't require that organic certification.
Right. Well, we're gonna discuss some of the questions about reinvestment in the community that Good Food Awards members do when we come back. Right now, it's time to take a short break, and when we return, we're going to continue this conversation with Sarah Wiener of Seedling Projects on Straight from the Source on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. I've devoted my idiot career to the old ways, the old recipes, the old tools, the old geography of where serious foods come from for centuries. And I've strived to make these wonderful things available to New Yorkers for 37 years. So it's a fait accompli for us to support Heritage Radio Network. And I hope you will too, and I hope you'll keep tuning in. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
Welcome back. This is Clay Gordon, and you're listening to Straight from the Source on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. My guest today is Sarah Wiener, principal in San Francisco-based Seedling Projects, the organizer of the Good Food Awards, and that's what we're talking about, the Good Food Award and good foods. Now, Sarah, I'm looking at some of the material that you sent me, and one of the things which really jumps out and strikes me is that you say that from last year's winners alone, there's been a cumulative investment of $800,000 in local farms to fulfill new demands for their award-winning foods. That's huge. It's a huge amount of money in investment, but what it must mean is that the public reception to the food that these award winners are producing has also been quite remarkable.
Yes, we're thrilled, and we're only now beginning to see what this effect has been. We talk with our winners after they've taken part in all the celebrations and put the Good Food Award-winning seal on their website and on their products, and we're starting to hear interesting stories. For example, Emmy's Pickles and Preserves out here in the Bay Area said she quadrupled her production. She's a gold seal winner, so it's completely organic, local. Her product was that she won for was a pickled turmeric cauliflower.
I remember
30,000 jars this year.
I remember tasting that during the awards. I mean, one of the highlights of the awards is the presentation in the Ferry Market Building. And after you get done, they take the downstairs food hall and they put tables. And you can wander from one end of the Ferry Building to the other end of the Ferry Building, going from table to table to table. And there are pairing selections. So there'll be a beer, there'll be some spirits, there'll be some charcuterie, some cheese, some preserves, all of it, paired somehow magically to sort of go with each other. It's quite a remarkable experience to be able to meet the people who are there, but be able to taste this just wide range of just truly excellent stuff.
It's a fun night.
I'm sure the culmination of a lot of work. Is it open to the public as well, or anybody can buy a ticket to the gala?
We do. The ceremony itself, since we have a limited space to 400 people, and the winners and their friends and family almost take up all that space, that part is by invitation, but the reception that you spoke about with all the winning foods and all the winners there is open to the public, and you can buy tickets.
And then there's also the market the next morning. So every single one of the award winners is given a table in the Ferry Market Saturday morning farmers market. And members of the general public can go in and taste and purchase. Is that correct?
That's right. And definitely something not to miss, because there's just incredible things from all over the country that are just so fun to taste and take home.
And not only that, but the ability to interact and ask questions with the producers. I mean, you had all of the chocolate award winners were there last year. Many of these are friends of mine, people I've known for many years. Some of them I know only through my community, and we've conversed on via email. But getting a chance to be able to sit and talk with, you know, the guy who is actually making the chocolate and saying, okay, Jeff or Todd, you know, how are you sourcing the beans, and making as close a connection as you possibly can with the people who are milking the goats and converting things is quite remarkable, and an experience I think that most of us lack today. Even if we go into a really good market, being able to make that connection is just so important.
I'm glad you bring that up. That is a really special thing about the Good Food Awards marketplace. And last year we started a beer and spirits pavilion where the brewers and the award-winning distillers are there in person talking to the public as well. And we heard back from some of them that it was the best event that they'd ever participated in, because the public was so engaged in wanting to hear about what they were doing and why they were doing it that way. So I'm very proud of our public here in the area that comes out for it.
No, it's a great opportunity. I certainly enjoyed it. I learned a lot from talking to people and seeing people's reactions and hearing the questions they had. Everybody brings a set of experiences that they have. They're not necessarily the ones I have. And being able to learn from members of the general public who came in and asked questions it would never occur to me to ask was a lot of fun. But for me also, it was like going down to the charcuterie and getting something and go, God, that just reminded me of something I tasted and one of the cheeses on the other side. So I have to go run to the other side and get some cheese and put the two of them together and go, oh my God, wouldn't this be great with this chocolate? Or, oh gosh, I can imagine putting this on top of a piece of bread with that piece of preserves. I mean, just an enormous amount of fun. But there's just a huge amount of work on the back end. I remember working with you and your group last year trying to put together the guidelines for the entries for chocolate. And, you know, one of the big challenges we had was, you know, even within the chocolate industry, the craft chocolate industry here in the United States, there's no formal definition and no agreed upon understanding of what it means to be a craft chocolate maker. So how do you put together entry guidelines when you don't even have that sort of basic agreement? I mean, are there other areas of the awards that, you know, have this sort of same kinds of problems?
Absolutely. And the first step to approaching this is really to bring together people like you for each industry. Our committees are critical in developing the criteria, and they review them each year. So maybe something's changed, and we can make the criteria a little bit more stringent. The industry has moved forward. So bringing together diverse expertise in each category. Mm-hmm. And then we still, even with the top people in the field thinking it through, we still come across challenges.
Right. Well, we had that challenge this year in the confectionery category. It's not one that we faced last year in chocolate, because most small craft chocolate makers don't use lecithin when they make their chocolate. But a very few confectioners actually manufacture their own chocolate, and so they're buying it commercially. And the vast majority of chocolate that's made commercially in the world has lecithin in it. Most of the lecithin is derived from soy, and a significant percentage of the soy is GMO. And if one of the basic tenets of the awards is no genetically modified organisms, how do you go and have a chocolate or a confectionery category where most of the people can't compete because they're not in control of that ingredient?
Absolutely, and I think that the resolution we came to for this year is a great one, which is that since this lecithin is it's less than 1% of the chocolate, which in itself is not 100% of these confections, we're going to allow it just this year and let every confectioner know from the time they're applying this year that next year it's not going to be allowed. So hopefully they'll have a year to source some chocolate without lecithin, and hopefully it can help move things forward.
Well, I mean, you and I have had this discussion, and it's certainly something that hopefully that the Merchants Guild will push towards, which is being able to help people source ingredients. I mean, being able to look at the collective wisdom of thousands of entries and say, you know, here is a source for non-genetically or lecithin, which it doesn't have GMO in it. We've even noticed, I think you told me yesterday that somebody came to you and they're actually thinking of reformulating some of their products in order to make them eligible for entry this year.
Yes, it was very exciting. We had an email from a great confectioner saying, you know, just looking over the guidelines for confection, she's already begun to source differently so that she could be eligible for the Good Food Awards. And that's very inspiring for us, for everyone.
Right. You know, and huge potential implications, which I think is actually perhaps one of the things which is going to set the Good Food Awards apart from other similar kinds of competitions that are around, that people are looking at it and saying, oh, you know, I can see the economic value of it. It's really easy to be able to see a direct return from being being selected as a winner, and therefore it makes sense for me to go and make the extra effort to go and source more locally, source more ethically, source more sustainably, source more responsibly, and still try to adhere to the tasty aspect of what it is we're doing. I mean, for me, in hearing that back and forth, it became quickly apparent that, you know, one of the issues that many people are having, you know, and as I say, I've gotten, you know, a half a dozen or more people from my community who've been asking me to interpret the entry guidelines, is that cost is a real issue. You know, people really don't understand what the true cost of production is, and we don't understand that the that agribusiness actually artificially lowers the price of things, and that when we want to look at things which are sustainably produced, that, wow, I mean, there is a real difference in the actual cost of sustainable production.
Absolutely. And I hope through the Guild, you know, and year-long activities, we can do things like consumer awareness campaigns, and that certain members who have found a source for something or who have worked out some of these challenges can work with other members. But, you know, we can always maybe think about buying less and buying better. That's what I try to do. And but it's a real problem. It's really a challenge.
No, it absolutely is. And so, have you always been a foodie? Is this something you aspired to from a young age? You're a cook, or, you know, did you come at this from not the food perspective, but from some other point of view?
Absolutely, the food perspective. I've always been a foodie. My mother said I was the best of her three children because she could just give me something to eat, and I'd go anywhere without, you know, crying or making any trouble. When I was in high school and college, and there wasn't so much of a span of different activities that people were doing within the food world apart from cooking or writing about food. So I started cooking in kitchens. I love cooking. It was fun, but it was not quite right for me. I respect everyone who has that lifestyle. It's hard.
Being a chef day in, day out is really hard. I mean, it requires an enormous amount of commitment.
Enormous amount of commitment and physical stamina.
Yes. Well, it also really requires a lot of physical stamina to be a farmer, right?
Yeah.
Right. And, all right. So, Sarah, I want to thank you today. That's about all the time we have for today. I want to let all of our listeners know that entries for the Good Food Awards are being accepted through August 31st, 2012. You can visit www.goodfoodawards.org to learn more about submitting your good food and to download the entry form and learn more about the entry guidelines for chocolate, confectionery, charcuterie, cheese, beer, spirits, coffee. Did I get them all, Sarah? Is there one more?
Cheese.
Cheese. I thought I said that. But anyway, I want to thank you, Sarah, for being my guest today. I also want to thank Jack Inslee, my producer, for engineering today's show. You can always find archived episodes of Straight from the Source on heritageradionetwork.org and on iTunes. Remember, we're live. No, we're not live. We're recorded today, and hopefully we'll be back at you shortly. And if you have any questions about the program, you can call in 718-497-2128 or email us at info@heritageradionetwork.org. And we'll see you shortly, and thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.